Okay, we welcome to the Shilling Show David Murata. David is the president of Murata Wealth Management and also online at muratonmoney.com. You read his columns in the daily newspaper on Sundays that he does along with his daughter, Megan Russell. And he is here today with us to talk about the economics of healthcare. David, this is an important topic. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. So I guess the first thing we need to talk about is why insurance companies are reluctant to cover preventative care. Because I think people listening right now would say because they're greedy, because they don't want to spend any money, and they're just not going to do it, even though it makes all the sense in the world. So that would be the answer that comes to a lot of people. What's the reality?
Yeah, much of the Affordable Care Act was justified on the basis that we were going to cover lots of preventative care measures, lots of screening, and that would somehow save money because we'd catch these things early before they were expensive. But it turns out that most preventative care options, most screening options don't save money. They may save lives, but they don't save money. And the reason is because if you tested every test for everything that you could possibly have of all the screenings that they have, it would be very, very expensive. And in, 98% of the population, mm-hmm. you'd find absolutely nothing. So we wrote that in the vast majority of cases, these screenings have absolutely no medical benefit because you screen for them and you find out the patient does not have whatever the condition is that you were screening for. So that's a very, very high burden then to try to say, well, how does it save money on the few cases, save enough money on the few cases where it finds something to actually be able to pay for itself? And we're talking about insurance companies, or we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, or we're talking about Medicare, things that are trying to maintain costs because you don't just want to balloon costs completely. And so it turns out it would have to save money. Well, you found something. Now you need to go do something. Mm-hmm. So now you need to actually pay for what you're going to go do. And there's no guarantee that you found it in time or you found it enough. And so the burden of saving money through preventative care is just a very, very high burden. There's only a few things that will save money when you're treating healthy people. Vaccinations are probably the poster child of preventative care. Mm-hmm. And the reason is you do it once. There are potential side effects, but they're very remote, and then you're covered for life. You don't have to keep going back, But you take something where you have to do the screening, every single so many years, and like mammograms, and you're exposing the patient to radiation, and that's got its own risks with it. And then the number of cases where someone had a mammogram, and then a few months later, and it was fine, and a few months later. Then it turns out they have breast cancer, so the mammogram somehow missed it. There's cases like that where it's not as clear that there's a benefit economically. Now, I'm not saying there's not a benefit medically. Medically, you would be good to be sure that you are screening yourself for all the things that you're likely to have, but some people are more likely to have things than others. But economically, there's not. And so all the Affordable Care Act does by paying for all of these screenings is encourage more screenings, yes, and may be better for Americans' health, but it's certainly not better for America's pocketbook. It will cost more in the long run.
Yeah, this was supposed to be the quote-unquote Affordable Care Act, obviously another instance where that's simply not true. David Murata is our guest. 977-1070 is the phone number. We've got a couple minutes here, about 3 minutes. I want to talk about colonoscopies because I think this is a big one. You mentioned mammograms and so forth. But here's one particularly for men, and people would say, well, gosh, if I could catch this cancer early, that would probably save a lot of money. Is that the case with colonoscopies?
It turns out it's not, and it's not for a number of reasons. Again, we're not saying that colonoscopies won't save lives. Mm-hmm. We're saying that colonoscopies won't save money. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because colon cancer is it's a leading cause of death, which is why it might save lives. But it's still not that common. And when you do a colonoscopy, your odds of catching a cancer are very small. Your odds of catching and treating polyps, which could lead to cancer, is, again, not very big. And yet colonoscopies in the United States are one of the things that was touted by the advocates of the Affordable Care Act as being very, very expensive in the United States. And they're very expensive in the United States partly because we use sedation. They don't use it in Europe and Asia. And then it costs a lot because now it's a covered feature, and so colon colon screening is there's now a higher demand for it. And the way the market reacts to a higher demand is by raising prices. And so you have this odd effect, such that, the colonoscopy, the routine colonoscopies are very expensive, and yet they're only finding a very, very small percentage. And then even in that case, it doesn't actually reduce the cost of the treatment of the cancer. And so while it might save lives, it's just a very, very expensive. And the Affordable Care Act has a whole list and page and a half or two pages of the newly covered preventative care screenings in the Affordable Care Act. And that both drives up the price, making it less affordable for people who don't have any health care coverage. And it also drives up the cost of health care, which is what the Affordable Care Act was not supposed to do.
So in our remaining minute, what is the purpose of the sedation? I've actually had this procedure before. I was sedated. Why is that mandatory?
It's a United States oddity. We've written it in our laws that sedation has to be covered as well. And Europe just thinks Americans are wimps and can't deal with it. Doctors will argue sedation is necessary, so otherwise people would not go through the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's necessary just to get people to go through the procedure. A reaction to the sedation is actually one of the most common side effects that ends up causing troubles. And so, it's not clear. What is clear to me is that the government shouldn't be making these decisions for us. We should be free to make the decisions. And the government shouldn't be paying for all of this. We should be making the decision as to whether or not a colonoscopy is necessary or some other cancer screening is necessary, or whether the sedation is an appropriate cost for my experience.
It makes all the sense in the world. And we're going to continue this conversation with David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management, on the economics of healthcare. If you have questions, comments, challenges, hey, maybe you're a big supporter of Obamacare, we'd love to hear from you. It's 977-1070. You can get in line right now. The Shilling Show and David Murata back right after this. It's the one and only Shilling Show. Thank you for being with us weekdays from noon to 2. I want you to make an appointment with this program. Coming up in hour number 2 at 1:45, Congressman Robert Hurt joins us live from Washington, D.C. A lot to talk about with him. Right now, we continue conversation with David Murata, 977-1070, on the economics of healthcare. And I really think this should be a mandatory class for high school students, David, so that when they graduate and they start looking, when they actually become adults at age 26, that they could start looking at this with an economic eye instead of just saying, I want someone to pay for my health care.
Yeah, economics is really a way of looking at the world, and you start to see things differently. And many of them are counterintuitive. A lot of people say, I can't afford to pay for my own health care. I need the government to pay for it. And they don't realize that the government paying for it is why it's unaffordable in the first place. It's kind of like if you had grocery store insurance and everything that you put in your cart was covered with your $10 copay, and so you immediately start putting in smoked salmon and fine steaks and stuff like that. And pretty soon, there's a $10 copay, but your grocery store insurance cost, $5,000 a week. And then you say, well, I couldn't even afford to eat if I didn't have grocery store insurance. And yet it's the grocery store insurance which is driving up the cost of food.
But why is it that, that is such a terrific analogy. Why is it that that concept cannot be grasped by the masses?
I think the economics of healthcare is a combination of costs and caring. And most people don't have an economic way of viewing the world. It's why people don't do all the financial planning they should. They don't save everything that they should. We're very much compassionate people, and I think it's a mistake when the liberals think that conservatives are not compassionate. I think conservatives are compassionate, and there's not even a but. They're compassionate, and they understand the unintended consequences of trying to do good in a very, very simplistic way does more harm than good. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that conservatives don't care about people. We care about people deeply. We care about people so much that we're not willing to put in systems which are almost guaranteed to do more harm than good. And that's the economic way of viewing the world.
Yeah, that's exactly right. David Morata, you had some interesting figures about the costs of health care and Medicaid.
Yeah, so last time I was on the show, we were talking about the third-party payer system and how it really just incentivized providers to push up the prices. And this is just an interesting statistic. So Medicare began in 1965, and it began in 1965 because the average senior was spending 10% of his or her income on health care, and they were paying for all of it, and 10% of their income was a hefty chunk, and and it was difficult for them to pay, and they had to make choices. So now we fast forward after 50 years of Medicare, the average senior now only pays 5% of their total health care bill. 95% is paid through Medicare. But the 5% of the bill that the seniors are paying for now constitutes almost 20% of their income. Mm. So whereas before it only cost them 10% of their income, now it costs them 20% of their income. And so they're no better off. They're actually worse off under Medicare insurance than they would have been had we not had Medicare insurance. And so if you just look at the effects of what Medicare has done, it's driven up health care costs without really any greater savings.
Let's talk about the topic of healthcare costs versus outcomes. And so there was a question that you posed in the beginning of one of your articles, and again, it's online at maradaonmoney.com, from Dr. Michael Kirsch. Why is our per capita healthcare cost so much higher than other nations that demonstrate superior health outcomes?
Right. So there's a number of sets to this, and this was a lot of the justification, again, of the Affordable Care Act. Even in our country, healthcare outcomes differ widely, mostly by the population that you survey. So, for example, Asians have the best life expectancy at 86.5 years. Asians in New Jersey are the best life expectancy of any racial or ethnic group. It's 89.4 years. Hmm. African Americans have the worst life expectancy. But if they live in Minnesota, they can live an extra 5.1 years longer. New York has the best life expectancy of any state. Mississippi has the worst. Other studies have found Mormons are expected to live longer than other white groups. Even just looking at Utah, Mormons in Utah are expected to live 6.5 years longer than non-Mormons living in Utah. And the point of all this is it matters more what group you're measuring than it matters anything else. So if you have a homogeneous population of Asians, such as Japan, you will have a very, very high life expectancy rate, and your health outcomes when you look at life expectancy will be very, very good. If, on the other hand, you have an ethnic group that is sort of known to have problems or has low birth weights, for example, then you're going to have worse health outcomes. So it was interesting. I think it was Thomas Sowell who said about Mormons, they live longer because they don't drink, they don't take drugs, and they don't go around shooting one another. So there's a lot of things that are outside the purview of the healthcare delivery system and the quality of healthcare that you receive that matter more for superior health outcomes. In fact, in the United States, we could improve our health outcomes tremendously if we just sealed our borders, because the illegal immigrants among us actually have worse health outcomes for a whole host of reasons. I'm not trying to blame them for anything that they've done wrong, but limiting the population and excluding minority groups that might have poor health outcomes is one way of actually generating better health outcomes. And Japan is sort of the poster child of being able to limit who's in the country and just measure those people and have very superior health outcomes and incredibly good genetics that make them have the highest population of centenarians.
Yeah, and they ought to start reproducing, because otherwise they're going to be gone in about another generation or two.
Exactly.
Let's go to the phones, 977-1070, the phone number. If you have comments, questions, or challenges for David Morata, we'd love to hear from you as we say hello to Phyllis. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I had a bunch of things to do today, but God said stay home and listen to this program.
Thank you.
David, fascinating what you were saying about economics and people not understanding it. I'm 76. I haven't had an economics course in school for a long time, many years. Do you have, you and your daughter, a little course for, let's say, junior high school that senior citizens could learn about economics? You said some fascinating things earlier. Do you have, or could you put together a short thing? I'll write a poem about it. Now let's get it out. You know, put it in Seville, whatever.
Yeah, I'll put a I'll put a plug for a friend of mine, Ken Elzinga, who teaches economics in the University of Virginia right here. His Econ 101 class, or I guess it's 201 or something, is the most popular class on grounds. He's taught over 30,000 students. He's written a series of economic murder mysteries, which is a great way to learn economics. I was just last night at his party for his latest book out, and it's called The Invisible Hand. And he writes under a pseudonym, but I'll put a link on my, or I'll have Rob put a link on the Shilling Show for his latest Henry Spearman mystery novel. And it's called The Case of, or The Mystery of the Invisible Hand, or The Case of the Invisible Hand. It's supposed to be his best book yet, and I think that's a great way to learn economics. Along the same lines, anything by Thomas Sowell on economics, he's got an Introduction to Economics book. And he is a wonderful writer, and he will take you through all of the unintended consequences of economics and how to look at economics, look at the world through the lens of economics.
Phyllis, thanks so much for the call, and I'm glad that you got the message to stay home today. We appreciate it very much. That's our poet laureate, Phyllis Popkin, 977-1070. You know, I remember studying economics when I was at PCC, not PVCC, but Pasadena City College, and I had a teacher there, Mr. Lance, who's long since departed. But he brought everything into the realm of pizza and beer. I think he thought that that would be a great way to reach college students who were otherwise totally uninterested. And I think it goes to Phyllis's point, and your follow-up is that sometimes we need to go a little bit beyond the dry numbers to engage young people in the subject.
It's true. And speaking of the third-party payer system, college students whose parents are footing the bill act very differently in college than college students who are actually working nights and weekends to try to pay their own way through college. There's a much greater freedom to spend money and a much less appreciation of the benefit they're receiving.
100% correct. David Murata is our guest here on The Shilling Show. 977-1070 is the phone number. We're talking about the economics of healthcare. When we get back on the other side, I want to talk about these horrible cryptic medical bills and health insurance and why that is a problem. We'll get into all of that. Welcome your calls, 977-1070, the final segment of The Shilling Show with David Murata. In just a moment. Hey, it's The Shilling Show. It is 12:48, and we thank you for joining us weekdays from noon to 2, 977-1070. That's the phone number, 434-977-1070. We love to hear from you. Ellie stands by. The economics of healthcare with our guest, David Murata. All right. We were having this conversation off the air, and I could hardly believe what I was hearing, far worse than I thought. So let's talk about cryptic medical bills and this whole game that's going on behind the scenes with health insurance. This is really bad.
Yeah. So when you go to the emergency room or something like that, and you present with chest pain, and the doctors start treating you, when they're done with all of that treatment, they have to submit that to your insurance company or the government for Medicare or something like that. And they have to have all of their coding correct. First of all, the way they code things will determine how much they get paid. So if they put down chest pain, they're not going to get reimbursed adequately as opposed to heart attack or mm-hmm. or for all the tests that they ran. And insurance companies, they're receiving bills from the doctor's office. Even a routine visit to your doctor's office, they're receiving something, and it depends on whether the doctor is a long visit, a short visit, or a medium visit, how much they're going to get reimbursed for. So the doctor's office is coding all of these things and sending it off, and the doctor is just trying to get paid. So they don't actually care that you're happy with their bill mm-hmm. because you're not paying the bill. Your insurance company is paying the bill, and that's why you get bills you can't understand and bills that don't package it all together nicely into one cost that they could have told you ahead of time. And so they send it off, and it takes about half a doctor's office staff just to code things properly and submit them for payment and actually get paid. And the reason is because an insurance company has a great incentive to disallow a claim. All they have to do is say, well, it says here David J. Murata. We have the record as David John Murata. So are you sure you have the right person? And they can send it back and just auto-deny it because the name field, the middle name field, actually doesn't match exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, if they auto-deny things and they push it off for 5 months, and if you think about the number of payments that an insurance company is making, delaying payments for 5 months is worth a tremendous amount just in the cash flow of interest, if nothing else. They've received the money from all the premiums, and now if they can just delay it 5 months, they get interest on all of that money, and that can be worth thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars for an insurance company just in terms of their cash flow because of the massive amounts of money that are flowing through. And then if the doctor's office doesn't have their paperwork in order, they can just deny it completely because you didn't justify it.
So, David, this sounds like, at least in this instance, when people say the evil insurance companies, that sounds kind of evil to me. I don't know if it's the right characterization, but it's a word I've heard tossed around. So what's the fix to that particular part of the problem? Because that sounds pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, first of all, if you think it's evil insurance companies, then you've never dealt with Medicare.
No, I never have.
Because Medicare has a whole task force. They call it the Medicare Fraud Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
And their job is simply to go around saying, you do not have adequate documentation to be able to justify these Medicare charges. So we're going to deny them and we're going to bring a suit against you for Medicare fraud, and we're going to fine you for not having adequate documentation. So whatever the health insurance companies are doing, the Medicare has the force of law behind it, and they do it just as much because they're trying to stop abuses. And as we mentioned off air, you know, if I'm just a normal doctor and I'm trying mm-hmm. to code in my DRGs and my ICD-9s and my ICD-10 codes correctly, I don't really care about any of that. I'm just trying to help patients.
Mm-hmm.
So the honest and the honest doctors are often some of the worst at getting their documentation together, and they hire whole staffs to try to get that together and to work with them. The fraudulent claims have impeccable documentation. They have no trouble. All they have to do is to put together the documentation correctly, and they know that they need to be completely squeaky clean on their paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have some of the best documentation. So they're actually a lot harder to find, and the auto denying happens more, I think, on honest doctors and hospitals. So what's the answer? And that's part of the problem. Well, the answer is, who knows better what actually happened than the patient? So if you bill the patient, I can guarantee you the patient will go over it with a fine-tooth comb mm-hmm. if they're the ones paying. And so it's the third-party payer system, again, that not only drives up the cost of healthcare because the doctor has great incentive in just charging stuff and you have a great incentive in running up the charges, but the third-party payer system also makes fraud and abuse, 10 times worse
mm-hmm.
easily. Because I know a lot of people who will look over the bill when they're paying it and won't look it over when someone else is paying it.
So in our remaining minute, any chance that we're going to see a greater move away from this third-party payer system in America with Obamacare?
Obamacare is clearly hands down the worst legislation in the last 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse certainly than the Medicare. And it is going to make us all of our own brother's keepers. And if I'm going to be paying for your health insurance, not only do I not want you to drink sugary drinks, I don't want you to drink alcohol. And I think it's going to drive up the cost of healthcare and drive down the quality such that Americans will see it. I don't know how long it will take for Americans to see it. Sometimes it takes decades for those effects to fully go through. And then people will say, well, now it costs even more. We can't go back to the old system. So I'm on the one hand, I'm fearful we're stuck with Obamacare and we're stuck with it with actually making the third party payer system worse. On the other hand, the people who are getting the worst end of the deal are the young people today paying for all of us aging baby boomers health care. And I really hope that the young people will realize that libertarianism doesn't mean you don't have a heart. It means you do have a brain.
Mm, I love it. David Morata, thank you so much. What a tremendous show it was today with a lot of great information. He's online at moradaonmoney.com. And David, we always look forward to the next time.
Thank you so much for having me.